You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Michigan's Attorney General is challenging Waukesha over its plan to source its water from Lake Michigan. We'll learn more about that coming up.
First, when it comes to presidential election season, it can seem like the candidates are speaking a language all of their own. The men and women running for office want to tell it like it is, take our country back, put politics aside, or convince you that they're not part of the establishment. But what does any of it really mean?
Our next two guests are two Washington insiders, so to speak, who have written a new book that breaks down the political jargon so often used by the candidates, their staffers, and all the other pundits in the realm of politics. Their goal, to have us really understand what this year's crop of candidates are really trying to say and help us cast informed votes at the polls.
We've got David Mark and Chuck McCutcheon with us now. They're both veteran political journalists. Their new book is called Double Talk, The Language, Code, and Jargon of a Presidential Election. David and Chuck, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
So the idea that politicians are deliberately talking out both sides of their mouth, being deliberately confusing, that probably is not going to surprise anybody who follows politics. But why do we actually need a guide to help us decipher what they mean?
Well, because they're so skilled at it. Many of these people actually were fairly successful in their careers before elected office. Once they get in, they're very careful about using language that seems to obfuscate, to mean very something very precise, even when those listening might think something means something else. So I think it's necessary to always be vigilant on what our elected officials are saying.
Yeah, and I would just add to that that there's so much media out there now, and we're hearing more and more political double talk and weasel words now because candidates feel like they have to be on message, you know, during this endless 24/7 news cycle. And really, I agree with this guy, Barton Swaim, a former speechwriter for Mark Sanford of the Hiking the Appalachian Trail fame. He wrote in his book that, you know, it's really using vague and slippery language is not quite the same as lying. It's not intended to deceive so much as it is to try to buy time and sound like you're saying something instead of nothing. And that's because a lot of times politicians speak about things, and this will be a news flash, about that they really don't have any reliable knowledge or about that they just don't care anything about.
Right. Well, I guess they can't just say, actually, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah,
let me get back to you.
It would be a cardinal sin for a politician to say, you know, I don't know about that. They want to appear all-knowing and wise and all-seeing.
Are there any exceptions to that as you watch this election season unfold? Is there anyone you say, you know, that person does it a little bit differently?
Well, I think certainly not going to come as a surprise, but Donald Trump has really kind of broken out in this sense. And I think Chuck and I were predicting before this election season really got going that if there were really a candidate out there who spoke differently, that did not sound like a politician, they might have a better chance than some of their rivals. Now, that's not to say, speaking for myself, that I predicted Trump's rise at all, but I think one of the reasons why he's taken off among primary voters is that he doesn't sound like a traditional politician. He sounds like the guy you might hear at the corner bar spouting off his opinions, and for whatever reason, that seems to be appealing to a chunk of the electorate.
I notice, you know, working in radio, when you work in radio, which is kind of similar to when you're just giving speeches, you have to use sentences that are a little shorter, they're more declamatory, and that way, you know, it's not the same as the written word where you can have these long, beautiful compound sentences, and it does seem as though Donald Trump uses that to good effect on the campaign trail.
Yes, he does. In fact, there was just a really fascinating analysis on Yahoo News where they broke down the structure of Trump's sentences. And there's been a lot made of the fact that he is very simple and direct and he avoids polysyllabic words. But it even got into the fact that, you know, he's very good at repetition and making the same point over and over again and saying things in such a way that, you know, for his supporters resonate with them.
I want to dive into some of your examples here, and you decode a lot of the buzz phrases that we're hearing right now. And one of these is political jujitsu. Now, this has been around for a little while, but tell us about political jujitsu.
This is a way of kind of trying to thrust and parry against political opponents, where you take something that they're saying that would be a strength and try and turn it into a weakness. Karl Rove, the Republican strategist for President George W. Bush, was very good at this. And you hear Trump trying to do it, actually, in many ways, where it's interesting. He he really goes after popular figures. In fact, he's doing it. We'll see if this works. I think a good example of that is in Wisconsin in the lead up to the Republican primary on Tuesday, where Trump has been going after Governor Scott Walker, who, even though he didn't do very well in the presidential race, is still fairly popular among Republicans in Wisconsin. And that's kind of a case of trying to turn a seeming strength into a weakness. We'll see if it works or not.
And we've got a little clip now. I want to get a sample some of the others. The GOP frontrunners, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, both trying to portray themselves as anti-establishment candidates. And we've talked about establishment candidates in the book there. But before we hear this clip, what does establishment mean in political parlance?
Well, I mean, I think it's come to mean that, you know, it's this elite, you know, it's these people in the New York-Washington corridor who think they know better than you. And it's become conflated now with political parties, the Democrat and the Republican parties. And I think that feeds a lot of the appeal of both Trump and Bernie Sanders is that, you know, they're running against the establishment. You know, they've kind of revived this, you know, I'm against what these people are for.
Now here's a clip of Donald Trump pinning the establishment label on Ted Cruz and others.
You know, Cruz likes to pretend he's an outsider. In the meantime, he gets all the establishment support, including your governor. So believe me, they're all establishment.
Establishment seems like it's kind of a dirty word on both sides of the aisle right now. Is that unique to this particular election cycle, or has this been something that's been kind of a brand for a while?
No, this is a long-standing political strategy going back decades, maybe even centuries, yeah. Trying to essentially tag people who are in office as part of the problem, Washington insiders, et cetera. In that case, I don't think that critique of Cruz is actually too accurate, surprised by Donald Trump, in that, Cruz is a sitting senator, but he is widely disliked among his fellow Republican senators, not just Democrats on the other side of the aisle. And Cruz has built his career on opposing what he calls the Washington cartel, this group of nefarious insiders, in his view. So again, we'll see if that works for Trump, but I don't think that's the most accurate critique.
You don't hear the word nefarious used too often on the campaign trail, but it is part of that pack of words like a Washington insider and establishment. There's others right within that umbrella.
Well, one that is not unique to politics, but it's more like a schoolyard taunt, is liar. And this is something that used to be really taboo until not all that long ago, maybe 10 years ago. You heard candidates, or didn't hear candidates, really calling their opponents liars outright. They would say they're factually challenged.
Or disingenuous.
Exactly. Yeah. But now it's really commonplace, and there's no reluctance at all to call opponents liars.
Well, I want to get to another clip from this season's election. Now, this has been, I guess, particularly apropos on the Republican side when we had those massive debates with 16, 17 candidates, and there was a lot of fur flying. And the phrase we're talking about here is being the adult in the room, or in this case, the adult on the stage. Let's take a listen.
Throughout this campaign, I've talked about issues. I have never tried to go and get into these kind of scrums that we're seeing here on the stage, and people say everywhere I go, you seem to be the adult on the stage.
And that's Ohio Governor John Kasich putting his own twist on that phrase. Tell us about that one.
Well, this is a phrase that the media has used a lot to characterize Kasich. And, you know, it's a synonym for, you know, grown-up. It's a synonym for responsible. It's kind of portraying someone as, you know, who isn't just pandering politically and who knows how to do this. But, you know, the problem is that, you know, primary elections, I think, are different in that they don't always attract candidates who appeal to the adults in the room. I think those would be more general election candidates.
Well, we're talking right now to David Mark and Chuck McCutcheon. They're the authors of the book Double Talk, The Language Code and Jargon of a Presidential Election. And we're talking about what politicians really mean when they say the things that they say.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a political euphemism, a phrase that you've wondered about? Do you have a favorite or one that drives you crazy, maybe one from this current presidential election? What questions do you have for our guests about the language of politics? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to veteran political reporters David Mark and Chuck McCutcheon about the language of a presidential election and what politicians really mean when they say the things they say. They're co-authors of the new book, Double Talk.
And you can join us at 800-642-1234. What word or phrase have you heard from the current presidential candidates that you maybe like clarification on? Maybe there's one that you'd never want to hear again. Why do you think the language of politics is often so confusing? And what questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. There's a fun one that just came up into the realm of my consciousness recently that caught my eye. It's called, let's see, Inspector Javert. People reference this character from Les Miserables, and this is now kind of a thing. Tell us about that.
Chuck?
Yeah, this is the Les Miserables character, the zealous prosecutor, and people now invoke that figure. There's a lot of cribbing from popular culture that we see now in political media, and this is one example of that. And this is someone who is, you know, out of control, overzealous, just gone too far. And as we say in there, Hillary Clinton has had several inspectors like this. She had the Whitewater people, and now people have perceived it with the Benghazi investigation with Trey Gowdy, and it's kind of applied to people who are just abusing their power and raging out of control.
And I think in the past, politicians may have used the word witch hunt. Is that out of favor? Maybe instead we've got inspectors
over here. Witch hunt all the time.
Yeah,
that may just be an example of one that's been used to such a degree that they've looked for other examples. That one actually goes back to the McCarthy era,
right?
Of the Wisconsin ties. So it just may have been overused a bit through the decades.
It's kind of fun that we've got a Broadway musical being referenced, this character from it. Any others from pop culture that come to mind?
Well, I have a weekly column for the Christian Science Monitor, and I've been drawing from a lot of pop culture lately. People are trying to describe the zaniness of the Republican race. One metaphor that someone, Nate Silver of the New York Times, came up with, the specter of a brokered convention, he used Calvin Ball, the imaginary sport from the Calvin and Hobbes comic strip, which, of course, was a sport with no rules.
Wow.
And then people have also talked about Bizarro World, you know, the Superman and Lois Lane comic, where they lived on this parallel planet where they were evil. They've used that as, where black is white and up is down. That's been another one. And then, of course, another one you hear constantly, speaking of Wisconsin angle, is when something is so unbelievable that it has to be untrue, they'll preface it with not the onion.
Right, I've seen that one, not the onion.
Right.
Lots of fun stuff. So what was the one from Calvin and Hobbes, Taubin Ball?
Calvin Ball, yeah.
Calvin Ball, got it. Well, you know, we haven't talked about another one. This is we haven't heard from Hillary yet, and one of her apparently favorite words is, or phrases, evidence-based. Here's an example of that.
I want to get back to evidence-based decision-making. There's too much that has gone on in our politics recently that is just pure ideology, pure partisanship.
Hillary Clinton there using the phrase evidence-based. What do we know about that phrase?
Yeah, that one is often used in discussing the issue of climate change, and the implicit suggestion is that Republicans who question the science on climate change aren't looking at actual evidence. They're dealing on pure ideology. I don't know if she was speaking about it in that clip, but she often has in that way. And it's an implicit contrast with political opponents saying we look empirically at things. We look for policy solutions that work, unlike our opponents who just go off their emotions.
Right, but it's not just Hillary. Actually, Paul Ryan, speaking of Wisconsin, and Patty Murray, senator from Washington State, they had a bill to create an evidence-based policy commission that actually called for a group of experts in data and statistics to look into whether we should have a central data clearinghouse that could help Congress make decisions on spending that don't violate privacy rights. So it's not just a Hillary word. I think it's got a broader application.
We're talking right now about political jargon with Chuck McCutcheon and David Mark. Their book is called Double Talk, and we're going to go to our phones right now at 800-642-1234. And we've got Justin on the line in Madison. Justin, hi.
Hi. The word that always seems to drive me nuts is disenfranchised.
Disenfranchised. So not used in the traditional sense, in the broad sense it bugs you, or just any use of this word?
It just seems like it comes up so often.
All right, disenfranchised. Let's talk about that one.
Well, this is one that I think in more modern times, at least in recent years, that Democrats often use, talking about voting rules. And you hear a lot of suggestions by Democratic partisans that Republicans, particularly in the South, are manipulating voting rules to disenfranchise those who are likely to vote Democratic, usually minorities. So it can be kind of a loaded phrase, but there may be other uses for it as well.
And let's hit another one. This is, you know, this one kind of speaks for itself, but using the word folks in a narrative, what does that mean?
Well, this is, you know, one of the many rhetorical tools that politicians use to seem, you know, well, down home, and, you know, I'm just like you. I'm not like the establishment or those elites. And, you know, Joe Biden pulls it out a lot. He'll say folks all the time. You know, it's a linguistic cousin of another phrase you hear a lot of, which is, I'm the son of a, and then insert blue-collar term here. Mm. With Kasich, it's the son of a postal worker. With John Edwards 4-8 years ago, was the son of a mill worker. You know, so, you know, politicians are constantly trying to say, I'm above you, but I'm also on the same level of you at the same time. And this is one of those rhetorical tools that they use.
So here we are in the thick of election 2016. What phrases or words are really peaking this season?
Well, one that's sort of having an encore run is evolve.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Donald Trump, you said that he's, quote-unquote, evolved on abortion, and this was before the recent contretemps in the last couple of days when he was getting his campaign going and he was starting to take off. He said he had become anti-abortion and evolved, just like, in a way, President Obama famously evolved into supporting same-sex marriage about 4 years ago.
Right. And there's another couple I think we're going to hear a lot more that are very focus grouped and poll tested because they sound authoritative, but they're very actually vague and they have multiple meanings. Common sense is one of those. Innovation is a word that Democrats use a lot and Republicans, because it's kind of got this broad, you know, forward thinking thing. Another one that Hillary started using and doesn't use anymore was everyday Americans, which apparently didn't have the power and pull that it had, and so she dropped it. So I think you're going to be hearing words like that in the future.
Well, Chuck and David, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you.
That was Chuck McCutcheon and David Mark. They're the co-authors of the book Double Talk, The Language, Code, and Jargon of a Presidential Election. And you can read more about the science of double talk on the Central Time Facebook page.